everyone. Welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 559 for December 13th to 2015. I'm Peter Reitzis here in Carrboro, North Carolina, starting off with some good voluntary stuttering. And I'd like to welcome back to the show, it's been at least a few years, Miss Kristen Camella. Hey, Miss Camella.
Hello, Peter. It's great to be with you again.
It is so great to have you back on air. When I was just a person who stutters, studying to be a speech language pathologist, and probably even before I started my studies, I was watching you on VHS tapes and hearing you speak at conferences, and you have always been an inspiration. So thanks for doing all that you do for people who stutter and our families.
Well, you're welcome, Peter, and I want to turn that right around and thank you as well. You're making a wonderful contribution to the world in this area.
Thank you. Our big topic today is becoming a board certified specialist in fluency. And there's no better person to talk to than Kristen Camella, who is a speech language pathologist, a person who stutters, and member of the initial cadre of board recognized specialists in fluency and fluency disorders. Miss Camella is co-chair of the American Board of Fluency and Fluency Disorders. And I think this is your fourth year, Kristen, and you're about to move on and give your post to Lynn Shields. Is that correct?
That is correct. I have served on the American Board for 4 years, and 3 of those years I've been chair of the board, and it is time for me to pass the torch on. And I know that the board will be in very good hands with Lynn Shields.
Yes, I am sure. And I said you were co-chair. I got that incorrect. You're chair, right?
That's correct. We have a chair and a vice chair. So Lynn is vice chair, and I'm chair, and then she will become chair after this year.
That is excellent. We're going to get all into this very important topic today. And just here at the top of the show, I'm going to say that at stuttertalk.com, we've had links up for some time for 2 referral lists. One of them is the Stuttering Foundation therapy referral list at stutteringhelp.org, and also board certified specialists in fluency, stutteringspecialists.org. And Ms. Camille is going to be talking today about that latter link I just gave, stutteringspecialists.org. And before we get into what a board-certified specialist in fluency is, why is it important, Kristen, that that we have speech-language pathologists who are specialists in stuttering?
Peter, this idea of specializing in stuttering and other fluency disorders is not a new idea. It's something that Van Riper and Stanley Ainsworth were talking about many, many years ago. I remember sitting at the ASHA convention in a conference room with Dr. Eugene Cooper, with Dr. Hugo Gregory, and many others that were involved in creating the opportunity for a speech pathologist to become a specialist in this area. So this is not a new concept, and I think that we continue to see how important it is because we want the consumer, whether it's a child or a teenager or an adult client and their families, to be able to access professional help if needed and when needed from an individual who perhaps has done more training and has focused more in this area. It's a low incidence problem, and we know that many universities are still not providing full courses in this area or clinical opportunities for their students that are graduating.
Just before we move on to the specifics of all this, I just want to share with listeners that, and with you, that a few years before this specialty recognition or certification, sorry if I'm confusing the terms, began, I was in a desperate place with my stuttering. And the reason to me that it's so important that we have referral lists for people who stutter in our families is that I didn't know how I was going to go on in life. I didn't know how I was going to get a job. I didn't know how I was going to live because I was so afraid of stuttering. And I was able to call the Stuttering Foundation and they got me in touch with Phil Schneider. And that phone call and meeting Phil changed my life forever. So, you know, I'm so grateful for people like you, for the Stuttering Foundation, for being able to get in touch with people who can help with stuttering. I just, you know, again, the work that you're all doing is great. So you're here to speak about becoming a board certified specialist in fluency. And I'll just kick that off by saying it's my understanding that to do that, you have to first be an ASHA certified speech language pathologist for 5 years, and then you can start this process. Is that right? And can you take it from there?
Yes, that is correct. And Peter, if it's okay, before I speak to that, one of the things that I would also like to share is that I second your feeling about finding individuals who can help you with your stuttering. I was just thinking as you were talking about being with the Gregorys when I was just a freshman in college and was also in a very, very trying time with my own stuttering. And the fact that my parents were able to find some individuals who could help me changed my life forever as well. And so, and I think that one of the things that's important that I mention is that speech language pathologists that have their CCC or their Certificate of Clinical Competence, they don't have to become board certified in the area of fluency in order to work with individuals with fluency problems. And there are probably three groups right now of individuals who do specialized services in the area of fluency. We have individuals that have a board certification in fluency, and then we have individuals also that participate on the referral list of the Stuttering Foundation who perhaps may or may not be board certified. I believe our goal in the future is to continue to evolve this certification process so that we can better help the consumer be able to locate individuals who truly have the experience and the competence to help them. But that doesn't mean that a child can't be helped by a speech language pathologist who is not board certified. But certainly, I do believe it can make a very big difference in the life of a client. So when we talk about certification, it's really a process where at first a candidate needs or an individual needs to meet a set of specific standards in order to apply to become what we call an active candidate for certification. And so, yes, those standards do include, number one, that you have to have your CCC. So you have to have graduated with a master's degree and then completed your clinical fellowship year.
I'm sorry, can I just jump in? So for those who don't know, CCC is your Certificate of Clinical Competence from the American Speech Language Hearing Association, also known as ASHA. Please go on, Kristen.
Thank you so much. So after you obtain your CCC and you've worked for that initial year in doing that, then you must work for 5 years. And we felt that 5 years was a very important number because not only are you learning about fluency disorders, you're also learning in those initial years of your career how to become a clinician. You are learning about language, about articulation, phonology, so many issues that may coincide with a client who has a fluency disorder. So you have to work for those 5 years. During those 5 years, however, you can be accruing your direct clinical hours in the area of fluency. And I believe that number's at about 450 direct hours of service. If you happen to be a supervisor at a university, you can also utilize some of those hours in the area of supervision, as well as your own direct hours. And on our website, we have more detail about this. So during that time, you're collecting those 450 hours, and you're also collecting your continuing education hours. And once you meet that set of standards, you apply to become an active candidate. And if you are approved, then you are able to submit a portfolio of 3 detailed case studies, as well as a summary of your philosophy of treatment to the American Board of Fluency and Fluency Disorders for approval. And upon approval, you become a what's called a BCS-F, or Board Certified Specialist in Fluency.
So this is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us here with Kristen Camella. And for those who want to learn more about becoming a board-certified specialist in fluency, go to stutteringspecialist.org. So for speech-language pathologists who want to do this, they need their certificate of clinical competence, 5 years of practice as a speech-language pathologist, and about 450 hours of direct service or treatment, and that could also be accrued during those 5 years. Would hours at IEP meetings count too, or is that not countable?
Well, I think on our website, under the standards, we have the definitions of different things that are necessary. But I think that if we look at that and we look at the specifics, direct clinical hours would include contact with the client, as well as providing any type of service for that client that is part of that therapeutic process. So one of the things that happened, Peter, is in 2014, ASHA set up an opportunity along with a consulting company for the group in fluency to go through what's called a practice analysis. And so we spent, we had a person-to-person meeting at ASHA, and then there were several conference calls following that over the course of a year. We gathered a group of individuals who specialize in fluency, who work in different service delivery settings, to come together and determine what are the main domains of service that a person with certification would be able to do and demonstrate. What does a certified specialist do? And what are those competencies under each of those domains? And so if an individual is providing a type of service that is for a particular client, such as a meeting, educating the teacher about stuttering, those would be all hours would be all related to that delivery. And they would also be related to service provision, one of our major domains, as well as advocacy, as well as leadership.
Very important in information. And I just want to say, when I was listing the criteria a moment ago, I didn't list it all. I just wanted to give some of the big ones back just so the listeners could hear it again. And just as we're talking here now, I'm thinking of all the conversations I've heard in stuttering over the years where you might hear somebody say, oh, that practitioner only does fluency shaping, or that practitioner only does stuttering modification. And you know, I know that it seems like there's less of that these days, but can somebody become bored certified if they're pretty stringent in how they do treatment, and let's say they admittedly only do one type of treatment? I mean, can you go through the process only doing one type of treatment?
That is a very good question. And one of the reasons why this practice analysis was so critical was that it looked at what our assessment procedures were and what had we been doing to evaluate a candidate to become a specialist. And in developing these major domains and competencies, are we accounting for them throughout not only the application process, but the portfolio submission process? So what the board is looking for in a specialist is an individual who has a broad understanding of fluency and fluency disorders. And while they may utilize a particular approach for a particular client, when they submit their portfolio, we ask not only for their philosophy of treatment, but also for the rationale for why they have made the decisions they have made for that client at this particular time. We know that there are various types of treatment that can be beneficial for various clients. What we are looking for as a board is, was this candidate able to demonstrate that they have met the competencies across not only the service provision domain, but the other three domains? And the choices that they've made for that particular client need to be backed up by rationale, research, experience, the desires of all the stakeholders involved. So in answer to your question, a candidate would not be turned down solely because they didn't adhere to perhaps the treatment approach of the individuals on the review committee from the board. A candidate must meet the domains and the competencies that have been developed and will continue to be evolving and applied to the portfolio assessment process.
It's a tough place to be in. I mean, for those who don't know, it sometimes feels like the stuttering world is Democrats and Republicans only about stuttering. So that it sometimes feels like there's a lot of disagreement and there's, you know, two big camps. I mean, we could say there's more than two big camps, but it often feels like there's two camps. And I certainly wouldn't want to say that somebody who practices differently than me shouldn't be able to get credentialed. I'm in no way saying that. It's just, it's challenging. Like, I'm thinking of the person I knew when I was in about grad school who used to say they only do fluency shaping with everybody, you know? And I imagine that's a tough spot to be. Or to be fair, person says, well, I work at this particular program and this program is stuttering modification. And anyone who comes through the door, that's what we're doing. I mean, you know, it puts you all perhaps in a tough spot because there's a lot of us in this field who have very strong feelings about what type of approach we're going to use and the philosophy behind it. There's not a question there. I apologize. I'm just thinking out loud, Kristen.
No, I think, Peter, your point is very important and very well taken. And I do believe that perhaps there aren't just two sides of a mountain, but multiple sides. And one of the things that I think is very important is that programs such as yourself allow for different individuals to talk about their ideas and their philosophies. And the more we continue to talk about these things and debate them and question them and review them, the more we're going to be able to help the individual who stutters. And I think you'd agree with me on that. And
oh, yeah.
I will say that serving on this board for me has been a tremendous learning experience. It's been an honor and a privilege. It's been a tremendous amount of work. And one of the things I think that we all would agree, those of us that are on the board, and I believe our members, our affiliates who are certified, would also agree that one of the things we're looking for is critical thinking. Is the individual able to look at the big picture of the clients they are serving and recognize the fluency problem and the potential contributing factors, and how are they critically thinking around that process in order to get the progress that they are looking for? And we are continuing to evolve this process, and I feel very grateful that we were able to go through this initial practice analysis. And this spring, we will be working, the board will be working further, as well as some committee members with a consultant, to make sure that we are applying and continue to apply this data that we found regarding the competencies and domains to our portfolio assessment process.
When I was at the Friends Convention this summer, I heard somebody say there's something like 260 board-certified specialists in fluency. Is that about right?
So at this point right now, we had an initial cadre of about 300. At this point, I believe we have in the high 150s. So we had many individuals who retired that were in the initial cadre, or we had individuals who were in the initial cadre but were unable to keep up with the number of clinical hours needed to maintain this clinical certification. So we have less than the number 200 right now. We have about 100 and in the 150s. We have several portfolios that we are in the process of reviewing. We have had half a dozen right now new applicants apply who have become active candidates. And I'm very excited that I believe one of the things that we have done is we've created a process that is no longer mentor-driven. And when I say that, it doesn't mean that individuals don't seek out mentors and get guidance, of course, along the way as they develop their skills. But recognition was a mentor-driven process. Certification is a process whereby you do the study and the work, and then you apply and show the review committee that you are able to, through your knowledge and understanding of research and your clinical experience, critically think and provide appropriate treatment for clients of all ages. So the process has become, I believe, much more objective, and it's always evolving. But this practice analysis has given us a different way of guiding the process. But right now, we're a very small group.
Yeah, because I'm on your website now, stutteringspecialist.org, and I see that in my state of North Carolina, there are three. And yes. I just happen to know them all. And I'm not on there. And I'm not sure it needs to be said, but I feel very qualified to work with people who stutter. And that's not a challenge in any way. It's just a way of saying that there's a lot of, and you said this too, there's a lot of good people out there who do good work in stuttering. And is perhaps a good way to say it is that board certification is still up and coming. It's still burgeoning. It's still new. And that you guys are working on increasing your ranks. Is that a fair way to say it?
I would say that for the past 4 years, really the past probably 6 years, the board to 8 years even, I think the board has been diligently working to review the processes that were in place and to, at least since I've been on the board, I guess I can only comment about that, to make sure that we create and continue to evolve a process that has credibility, that has reliability and validity. And so we have worked very hard to make sure that the standards that need to be met are rigorous enough to allow the professional the time and the opportunity to get the training and experience needed to become a board certified specialist. And Peter, I know you mentioned that you are not on the list. And one of the things that we have talked often about on the board in these past years is there are a number of individuals just like you who are either working in the schools or are working at universities who are highly qualified to be board certified specialists, but for a variety of reasons did not go through the recognition process. I think the recognition process was at times very complex and confusing and very laborious. And I think that what we're hoping as a board is that individuals such as yourself consider applying and becoming certified, because as time goes on, what we want to leave for the younger generations of clinicians is a way that they can continue and work towards a goal for their own study, and especially for the consumer. Because if someone calls me and I know you and I know where you are, I know to refer that person to you, Peter, which is something that I would do. But if an individual doesn't know you or where you are, that consumer, that child may not be able to get to someone like yourself to have some therapy services that perhaps are warranted at the time. And if you have been a practicing clinician for more than 5 years, and you can look at the standards on the website to get the specifics here, but you are able to go back in time, not only for your direct clinical hours, but also for your continuing education requirements in order to submit an application.
Well, thank you for the kind recommendation. Again, you were somebody like, there's people like you and Bill Murphy and Walt Manning who I can count as friends now, and you know, Scott Yarris. But there was a time where I just looked up at you all like the famous stutterers who were doing great things. So it's such an honor to know you all now. Do you have time for a few more questions?
I sure do.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us here in Carrboro, North Carolina, with Kristen Camella. And you are in Illinois near Chicago. Is that right?
That is correct. I practice in the northwest suburbs of Chicago in an area called Buffalo Grove, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So I'm actually glad that you refer to the former process of becoming board certified as laborious, because I said something like that on Stutter Talk and folks got really mad at me because I had said, like, there's a reason that some of us don't want to do this. I'm glad that you're all making changes. I was asked, very kindly asked, a few times to do the process. And I remember saying to folks, I was really opposed to the video aspect of it. I really didn't like that we were being asked to take videos of our sessions and to send them in as part of the process, because as a stutterer, you know, that was such a vulnerable, tough time for me. And I didn't want to be videotaped. I just wanted to go and talk about stuttering and have a safe place to stutter. And so that was really a big reason why I wouldn't even consider the process. Is that still part of it? You still have to send in videos?
That is a very good question. And when you become an active candidate, you are required to complete 3 case studies. One within the early preschool years, one within the school age years, and then one adolescent or adult ages 16 on up. And as part of submitting the case study for each of them, the process does ask for a couple of videos related within the area of treatment that can highlight the engagement in the clinical process. Now, what you said and what you brought up is a very, very important point. And I think that, of course, our number one priority always is to consider the needs and the comfort level of the client. And I think that if you decide you would like to become certified and you are looking at a client to use as a case study, of course, we need permission from our clients, but we also need to know that they are comfortable with being on a video. And I will tell you, Peter, that the videotaping helps the assessors just observe the ability of the professional to engage in the therapeutic process. I think sometimes we observe videos that are sort of staged, where the clinician wants to show something and then the child maybe is not doing what the clinician was hoping. And what we're really looking for are a couple of snippets of the therapeutic process, whereby the professional is able to demonstrate listening, perhaps further probing the client, perhaps helping the client make a modification of some sort to either a speaking or another type of behavior. So I hear your concerns, and I think that's a point very well taken. And I do believe that the videos serve a very important role in helping the board understand that this individual not only can document in professional writing the experience with the client, but is also able to let us see how they engage in the therapeutic process, how they reinforce the client and are able to have that positive relationship. The other point I just want to make, when I say laborious, out of all due respect to the former recognition process and all the work that went into creating that, I think that perhaps a better word might be complex. And of course, we all have worked extremely hard to get to where we are. Nobody becomes a specialist in something without working extremely hard. But I think that because the former process was a mentor-driven process with many different components, it at times felt complex for the participants or the candidates to compile that information and to feel confident that, you know, they were submitting what the board was asking. And I think it's evolved over time. And I believe that it's very important that we have a process where we have criteria that needs to be met and that it is fair and it is reliable and valid. And so I believe that this process will continue to improve. And I really hope that individuals, Peter, such as yourself, decide that you would like to pursue the certification process, because that is modeling for the younger professionals, that is a way to continue your study and work and to help the consumers get to individuals that can provide service that they may be desiring.
It's a tough thing that we have to balance, because I completely understand that you guys want to do your job well and you want to see videos to know that the people who are applying, you know, have a good grasp of the work. And if I could just plant a seed, you know, working in the schools, it's not typical for teachers or therapists to videotape sessions. Now, I also happen to do private practice where that would be more typical. But as I said before, that's also awkward. So, you know, I just wanted the chance to say that I understand your perspective and wanting to do a thorough job. It still makes me a little uncomfortable. Like when that mom comes in, you know, so often I have a box of tissues on the table because mom has tears of fear or tears of joy. And then, you know, the third, fourth, and fifth graders I work with, they're so often ashamed of their stuttering that they don't even want to talk about it. So, you know, it is complicated because I work so much with people who stutter, and I'm really hesitant. I mean, I haven't brought a video camera in maybe 10 years or more, just because I used to videotape stuff for presentations. And then I realized, wait a second, you know, this 8-year-old child might not feel comfortable telling me that he doesn't want the video camera on. So, yeah, and perhaps I'm overly sensitive. I don't know, Kristen, but it's stuff I think about a lot.
Peter, I think that those comments are very, very well spoken. And I know that one of the things that I always do as I, you know, to work with people with fluency disorders so much is I know that I never put the video camera on unless I ask permission of the child and, of course, the parents. And, of course, that's for HIPAA regulations, but it's also for just what you're saying, that this is a place where you get to be comfortable and where you get to say what happens or doesn't happen. And I know that if I use any treatment videos for the training that I do to help other clinicians, I always show the client the video and say, this is what I'd like to show. Do I have your permission to do this? And one of the things that I really try and stress with taking video is that we use the video to show, you know, things that are going well. And if a parent is not comfortable with that emotion, then I would always, of course, just like you, go with the respect of the client. And these are tricky issues. And I think that those of us that grew up stuttering and that continue to evolve ourselves as communicators, as we all should, right? Everyone, not just those of us who stutter, but I think that we have to always talk with the people that we're with and find out what matters to them and what they would be willing to share with others in the learning process. So, but that's a point very well taken.
Thank you. Thank you, Kristen. So just one or two more things. And so I've heard over the years, our colleagues say that there are a few people on who are board certified who they would not refer to. And to be fair, I'm sure if we went through the Stuttering Foundation referral list, there might be somebody on the list who I would not refer to, who I might refer to other people first. But when you hear that, when you hear a colleague say, oh, there's somebody on who's board certified who they just wouldn't send a family member or a friend to, or a parent who contacts them, what's your response to something like that?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think that that issue, just in a broad sense, can be true no matter what profession you're dealing with. I think in the medical profession, certainly there are specialists in a variety of different medical subsets. And I certainly know there are doctors that I would refer to and doctors I would not refer to. So if I hear of something like that, being an affiliate of the certification program and also, of course, on the board, my first reaction would be to try and gain a better understanding of what it is about that individual that would, you know, warrant a comment like that. I also felt that it was very important that we included on the website, and the new manual will be up very soon. It's just going through revisions at ASHA. But if another professional has a concern about a certified specialist, or a parent or consumer has a concern, they are able to write to ASHA, to the Board of Ethics, and express that concern. So as a certification board, we do have a process in place if there is a grievance against a certified specialist. And one of the things that a person can do is contact the ASHA Board of Ethics. That would be the first step. And I feel very strongly, and I know you do too, that the consumer who stutters is our most important priority. And so I encourage professionals and parents and others, if they do have a concern, to report the concern and to make sure that that gets communicated. And I also think that the certification process has many standards that an individual has to meet in order to even apply to become an active candidate. And we feel that in the past few years, we have made the process more rigorous, because if you're going to work with fluency clients, you have to know a lot, not just about fluency, but about a lot of other disorders as well. So hopefully in the future, now, if an individual is concerned, they will report that concern.
Great points. I just want to give out the referral lists again, too. And they've been up at stuttertalk.com for a long time. And if you go to stuttertalk.com, just to the website or to episode 559, you'll see the links there for the Stuttering Foundation, stutteringhelp.org, and for board certified specialists in fluency, which we're talking about today, stutteringspecialists.org. My guest today has been Kristen Camella, who is chair of the American Board of Fluency and Fluency Disorders. And the American Board are the ones who certify you in becoming a specialist in fluency. And just before I let you go, are there any last things you'd like to say to reiterate your vision for the next 5 years, or what, however you want to bring us out, Kristen?
Yes, Peter, I'd like to close by saying it's been an honor to serve on this board, especially on behalf of the consumers who who stutter. And I think that for the past several years, we've made some very significant changes in the process for certification, the portfolio assessment process. And I think one of the things now is that the board is beginning to look at the different areas of service delivery. I know you mentioned being in the schools and also doing private practice. There are other individuals in hospitals or universities, but how can we better reach those individuals that would like to become certified and offer them support in doing so? Our mission, I know since I have come on the board and have been on the board and dealing with the former individuals, has been to set professionals up to be successful. Because if we can do that, then we are truly helping the consumer who stutters. And so I know that this year the board is hoping to attend meetings such as the NSA and Friends, and also the schools conference for ASHA, to begin talking with people more about the process and the manner in which they can go about executing that. We also hope to offer more assistance on our website in getting young clinicians to different trainings and helping them become aware of the types of training opportunities out there to learn more about helping individuals with fluency problems. So I thank you very much for allowing me to come on. It's been a pleasure to be with you again, and I look forward to our continued collaboration.
Oh, thank you so much, Kristen. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and to have you on Stutter Talk.